By faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to a place that he was to receive as an inheritance. And he went out, not knowing where he was going. By faith, he went to live in the land of promise as a foreign land, living in tents with Isaac and Jacob, heirs with him of the same promise. For he was looking forward to the city that has foundations, whose designer and builder is God. You know, it's interesting to me that faith is such a critical aspect of our life as Christians, and yet faith is so difficult, it seems, to give a clear, concise definition of it. In fact, the only biblical definition that I can think of is a fairly well-known statement in Hebrews chapter 11, verse 1. Now, faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. There, that clears it up for you, right? You ever define something and find out you generate more questions than you answer? That verse seems to do that for me. I don't mean to be even slightly disrespectful to the scriptures, and I have a great appreciation for the writer of Hebrews and what he's attempting to do here, but honestly, that definition leaves me wanting more, doesn't it you? I mean, for example, does that mean that you can have anything you want if you believe it hard enough? Is faith, as one little Sunday school boy put it, having faith means believing something that you know isn't true? I would probably alter that definition a little. Having faith means believing something that you know isn't true yet. But is that still a good definition? Have you ever taken what seemed to be a step of faith and the result was not what you expected? In fact, you made a big mess. And when that happened to you, did you ask the question, what did I do wrong? Didn't I have enough faith? Did I not hear from God properly? Was I just pursuing my own desires and hoping that God would bless them? And the truth is that you might not have done anything wrong. You may have done exactly what God asked you to do, but it simply produced a different result than what you would have expected or even wanted. I mean, Ann and I are going through some of those questions right now. We thought we knew what God had asked us to do, so we did it. It didn't turn out even slightly like we expected. And so we found ourselves asking all of those same questions. Did we miss God's will? Didn't we hear Him correctly? Did we not trust Him enough? Why didn't it turn out the way we expected it to turn out? Never crossed our mind that He might have been taking us on a journey that He didn't even tell us what the end was going to be. Why is understanding faith so important anyway? Well, the simple answer is because the just live by faith. The just, that's us. And if we are the just, we live by faith. Or as the writer of Hebrews puts it, and without faith it is impossible to please Him, for whoever would draw near to God must believe that He exists and that He rewards those who seek Him. Now, in this audience this morning, in this group of people, the vast majority of us have little problem believing that God exists. I dare say that there are many of us in this room who aren't necessarily convinced that God actually does reward those who seek Him. Now, make sure you read that verse correctly, because it does not say that faith alone is all it takes to please God. It simply says that without faith, you have no hope. Without faith, it is absolutely impossible for you to please God. As the old adage goes, it's faith alone that pleases God, but it is not faith that is alone. I think that's exactly what James was trying to say when he said, faith without works is what? It's dead. It's dead. You know, the ancient theologians argued for years that really there are three elements to biblical faith. First of all, there is an intellectual element to it. In other words, you have to believe certain content. You have to understand it and believe it. We've been hammering on this for months around here now. It matters what you believe. There is a content that must be accepted and believed as followers of Christ. There's an emotional element to our faith. In other words, there must be an appropriate emotional response to the content that we believe. I mean, let's be honest about it. If you believe something strongly enough that it is going to guide your life, then there must be some emotional reaction to it. And if there's no emotional reaction to it, we have to wonder how much you really believe it, don't we? And there's a volitional element to our faith. You must exercise your will to do that which is consistent with the content that you believe. I think that's what James is telling us, that faith that pleases God extends all the way to the doing. And faith that stops short of that is really dead faith. It's unproductive faith. It is not the life-giving dynamic that God intended faith to be. The Bible doesn't spend a lot of time parsing all the terms and correcting all our definitions when it comes to faith. God seems to just point to people that pleased Him and then says to us, do that. He wants us to know what faith is, and so He says, listen, you want to know what it looks like? It looks like that. Do that. And so this summer, we're going to look at some of those examples, some of those people that pleased God. We're looking at people whose lives qualified for God's Hall of Fame of the faithful. Every story that you're going to hear this summer is different. Every story that you're going to hear this summer is in some way very much the same. Today's story is the story of Abraham. Now, when it comes to faith, quite frankly, they don't get much bigger than Abraham. Abraham is affectionately referred to as the father of the faithful. He is to this day revered by more than half of the world's population. He is a major figure in three world religions, Judaism, Islam, and Christianity. He is the founder of the nation of Israel. His name is listed more than 300 times in the Holy Scriptures. He is unquestionably the preeminent man of faith in the Bible, and a man whose life changed the course of human history. Perhaps most important of all, according to James chapter 2, verse 23, Abraham was called a friend of God. Now, if you want to follow someone's example, picking somebody who is known as the friend of God is a pretty good place to begin. When the writer of Hebrews wants to explain what the life of faith looks like, he spent more time talking about the life of Abraham than any other biblical character. In reality, there are three stories we could talk about this morning. We can talk about the decision that Abraham made to leave his homeland and go to a place that God would point out to him when he got there. That's one act of faith. Then we could also talk about Abraham trusting God's promise to provide a child when he was a very old man and his wife had been barren for her entire life. Or we could talk about Abraham trusting God with his son, his only son, Isaac, when God asked him to sacrifice the boy as an offering. All of these stories teach concepts that are well worth our understanding. But I want to focus this morning on the first of those, on Abraham's decision to trust God and leave for a destination that he did not know. The story is actually told in Genesis chapter 12, verses 1 through 9. It's summarized in the verses that I read to you at the beginning in Hebrews chapter 11, verses 8 through 10. Both passages teach the same story. They teach the same lessons. When we first meet Abraham in the scriptures, he was actually known as Abram. It wasn't until later that God changed his name to Abraham. When we first meet him, he's living in a city that is called the Ur of the Chaldees, on the bank of the Euphrates River, not too far from the mouth of the Persian Gulf. He's actually living in the region of the world where the Garden of Eden was before the flood. Abraham is about 70 years of age. He's married. They have no children. His wife's barren. And as I said, they live in Ur, which was one of the most important cities of the ancient world. In Abraham's day, the population of Ur was about 250,000 people. There was a university, there was a large library. It was known as a center of mathematics, astronomy, and commerce. It was also a center of pagan worship. The vast majority of people that lived in Ur worshipped the moon goddess. We know from other places in the Old Testament that Abraham's family were idol worshippers. That means that most likely Abraham was an idol worshipper as well. If we try to harmonize all of the sequence of events that we find in the scriptures about Abraham, there are some question marks that arise for us. But what we do know is that one day the Lord appeared to Abraham and told him to leave Ur of the Chaldees and go to a land that God would identify. Abraham did that. He went as far as Haran, where his father lived. They settled there. In fact, they stayed there for nearly 5 years. And then one day, God came to Abraham again, and he said, I want you to leave your country, your relatives, your father's house, and go to the land that I will show you. And God said, I'm going to make a great nation out of you. I'll bless you, and I'll make your name great so that you can be a blessing to the whole of the world. And I will honor those, I will bless those who bless you, and I will curse those who dishonor you. And through you, all of the families of the earth are ultimately going to be blessed. So Abraham did it. At the age of 75, Abraham took his wife Sarah, his nephew Lot, all of their possessions and all of their servants, and headed toward what we now know as Canaan. When Abraham and his entourage arrived in Canaan, he went as far as Shechem, and he settled there for a while, and he lived literally among the Canaanites. The Lord again appeared to him, and he told him, he says, I'll give this land to your descendants. This is your inheritance. So Abraham built an altar to the Lord there. A little later, he moved on, he moved south, and he set up camp between Bethel and Ai, and he stayed there for a while. And again, he built another altar to the Lord. And then he continued further south, and he went to the Negev. And that concludes the story. It's a simple story, isn't it? But listen to me carefully. The purpose of Hebrews 11, the purpose of this story and all of the stories that we will look at, the purpose of this series is not simply to refine your definition of faith. It is to teach us how to live by faith. It is to teach us by example what it means to live by faith. So what does it mean according to Abraham's life? Three things. Number one, living by faith means accepting God's call without knowing where it leads. It means accepting God's call, not knowing where all it's going to take you. I mean, here's the way the writer of Hebrews opened the summary. By faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to a place that he was to receive as an inheritance. And he went out not knowing where he was going. Let me repeat that opening line again. By faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called. Isn't that a great line? Can you say that? By faith, when God called me, I did it. I said yes. I went where He said to go. I did what He said to do. Because in the life of faith, when God calls, there's only one right answer. There's something that's really interesting in here, at least to me. It's a bit of a nuance in the language. But the best translation of that phrase would go something like this. Abraham, while still being called, was already obeying. Now, there's a real transition that's going on here, folks. When God first spoke to Abraham, he was not a Bible-believing evangelical Christian. He was a pagan idolater. But by the time the encounter with God was over, Abraham was so anxious to obey that he started obeying even while he was still being called, it says. In other words, he was already processing the call with a bent toward doing whatever God asked him to do. Not everyone approaches God's call that way, do they? Some people just reject it out of hand. Some people say, well, I need more information. Some people want clarification just to stall obedience. Some people look for clarification to ensure obedience. That's Abraham. Abraham wanted as much clarity as he could get, but he wanted it so that he could be obedient. He was already in the process. And honestly, it didn't really matter where God wanted him to go, because he was already going. The answer was already yes. See, Abraham is so captivated by the one making the promise, and he's not motivated by the promise itself. Now, I believe that that's God's way of making sure that Abraham's motives are pure. Now, think about this with me for a moment. If God came to you this morning and said, listen, have I got a deal for you? You follow me, and I'll take you to paradise. How many of you are in? You know, I mean, come on. Follow me, I'll take you to paradise. You gonna tell him no? Most of us would say, I'm in all the way. But what if God came along and just said, follow me? That's a whole different decision, isn't it? I suspect some of us would say, I'd like a little clarification here. When you say follow me where? Nah, don't worry about it. Just follow me, I'll tell you when we get there. How are you going to respond now? Abraham was already saying yes, even while God was still calling. Even though he had absolutely no idea where he was going. Folks, it wasn't because he had seen a travelogue and Canaan looked so great. It wasn't because he had read the brochure and had compared the beaches of the Mediterranean to the riverbanks of Mesopotamia. Honestly, folks, God is not interested, hear me on this, God is not interested in you following him because he offers you a better deal. If that's your motivation, it's still all about you, isn't it? God wants you to follow him simply because you can trust him. Now, I'll grant you that God did, in fact, tell Abraham that he would receive an inheritance. And some of you are sitting there saying, well, see, there it is. Abraham made a decision because he wanted the inheritance. Maybe, maybe. But he didn't know what it was, and he didn't know where it was. And so he was still walking by faith, wasn't he? Can you imagine what his friends and neighbors were saying? I mean, Ur was a world-class city. People moved there because they wanted to be a part of that city. Why would anyone want to leave Ur? No doubt many of Abraham's friends thought he was crazy. I mean, obeying God and obeying his call meant giving up his friends, giving up his traditions, his position, his influence, his country. More than that, it meant risking literally everything on a vague promise from an unseen God to lead him to a land that I will show you. And when Abraham left Ur, there was no turning back. No matter what happened, nothing would ever be the same. Once he left the walls of Ur, he was on his own, following God into the unknown. You say, he really gave up all that without knowing where he was going? Yeah. Yeah, he did. That's exactly what he did. You say, well, that's crazy. Is it? Is it really? Well, you say, well, yeah, it is. I mean, it makes no sense to leave a good life to go to the unknown, to something that you don't even know what it's going to be like. Haven't seen, can't see. Listen to me, folks. When God calls you to anything, the unknown is always better than what you can see. Let me say that again. When God calls, when he calls you to do anything, the unknown is always better than what you can see. The greatest adventure that you will ever know begins the moment you say yes to God's call on your life. The greatest life that you can live starts with one step of obedience. See, when God calls, there's no guarantee about tomorrow, is there? There never has been for any of us. When he calls, there is no guarantees about tomorrow. Living by faith means living with no certainty about the future. But if you really, truly want to do God's will, sooner or later you're going to find yourself exactly where Abraham was, setting out on a new journey, setting out on a new endeavor that doesn't seem to make any sense to the world at all. The only certainty you will have in that moment is that God is called, and if God is called, the answer is yes. Abraham obeyed when he was called. Everything else that happens in this story flows out of that one basic decision. God called, he obeyed. He stepped out in faith, even though there was no guarantee about his personal future. Living by faith always means stepping out for God and leaving the results to him. There's no guarantee of anything. Living by faith means I am going to be the man or woman of God that God wants me to be, no matter where it leads me. He calls, I go. Number 2, living by faith means waiting on God to keep his promise. You ever gotten in the middle of something and haven't seen the fulfillment of it? What happens to you in the meanwhile? Have you grabbed a hold of this truth yet? God always keeps his promise, but he rarely does it when we think he should. Have you gotten that one yet? That was certainly true for Abraham. He left his home. He went to an undefined future, all the while waiting for the fulfillment of the promise. In verse 9 of Hebrews 11, it says, by faith, he went to live in the land of promise as in a foreign land, living in tents with Isaac and Jacob, heirs with him of the same promise. Now, I want you to mentally change places with Abraham for a moment. God takes you on a journey. You go as far as Haran, and he leaves you there for about 5 years with the internal sense that Haran is not your final destination. It's not the end of your journey. And then he comes along and he says, okay, now it's time. It's time to move. And he takes you to another place, to the place. This is it. This is the promised place. But once you get there, you still don't possess anything. You continue to live in the promised land, living in tents as though it's only temporary. Waiting's really hard, isn't it? Have you noticed that? I had a graphic illustration of that yesterday evening. I was at my daughter's house. My now two-year-old grandson was celebrating his second birthday. My two-year-old grandson is a godly young man. He loves basketball. That alone makes him godly. And he had just finished eating his dinner and had, as I remember, had his birthday cupcake. And he said to his dad, in only the way that he can say it, "I want to go play basketball, shoot hoops." And his dad said, "Okay, just a minute, I'll be right there." And I watched this young man go. Waiting's hard, isn't it? Waiting is really difficult at times. Just watch little kids when you tell them to wait just a few minutes and they get so antsy they can hardly stand it. You're no different. You're maybe a little more sophisticated in the way you show it, maybe. And yet when it comes to the promises of God, there's always waiting. Always. Count on it. There's a very interesting comment in verse 13 of Hebrews chapter 11. It says this: "These all died in faith, not having received all of the things promised, but having seen them," I love this line, "but having seen them and greeted them from afar, and having acknowledged that they were strangers and exiles on the earth." We're waiting today for some eternal promises, aren't we? This is not the end of my journey. There are some promises yet to be fulfilled. How do you wait? Can I suggest two keys to waiting for God's promises? Number one, acknowledge that this is not your home. That's what they did. Having acknowledged that they were strangers and exiles on the earth. Somewhere along the way in your walk of faith, you are going to have to own the fact that this is not home. You are going to have to own the fact that you will seem like a fish out of water here. That you'll be as out of step with your culture as Abraham was in the middle of pagan Canaan while trying to follow the one true God. And you know what's most interesting about this to me? Is that Abraham, who was not all that long ago a polytheistic pagan himself, is now so out of place among that culture. He lives beside them, but he is entirely out of step with them. Something has so dramatically changed in the heart of Abraham that he is willing to believe a promise for the future more than he is to allow this to be home for him. Which brings me to my second key. Don't allow yourself to get too attached to the world in which you live. Do you remember that old chorus? "This world is not my home. I'm just a passing through. My treasures are laid up somewhere beyond the blue. The angels beckon me from heaven's open doors. And I can't feel at home in this world anymore. I can't. No matter how much I try, no matter how much the pull is there, if my heart is focused on a promise of something yet to come, I just can't feel at home here anymore." That's exactly what Jesus was talking about when he said, "Don't lay up for yourself treasures here on earth. Instead, lay up treasures for yourself in heaven." That's what John was talking about when he said, "Don't love this world or the things of this world." you're going to have to come to understand that living in this world and not being attached to this world is the posture that every one of us have to take if we're going to pursue the promises of God. There's not one thing that God is going to ask you to do that is going to facilitate your loving this world and the things of this world. Not one thing. The contrast to the faith and patience of Abraham was the impatience of his nephew Lot. Do you remember that story? Abraham lived in the land of Canaan, where God had told him to go. But there came a moment in which there had to be a separation. And where did Lot choose to go? Lot chose to go toward Sodom. Do you remember what happens? Do you know what happens? If you continually look at the things of this world. If you're focused on the trials and the troubles, the struggles and the successes, the money and the fame and the pleasures of this world. Listen, if that's your focus, then the same thing is going to happen to you that happened to Lot. You're going to get absorbed in it. And you don't even notice, all the while that you're absorbed in, you don't even notice the fact that the world is going to hell in a handbasket. So what have we learned about this life of faith? Well, it begins by accepting God's call without knowing where it leads. And it endures while waiting on God to keep his promises. Number three, living by faith means being motivated by a vision that others can't see. In verse 10 it says, "For he was looking forward to the city that has foundations, whose designer and builder is God." There's a nuance in here again. In the Greek language, there are two kinds of articles. There's regular articles, and there's, I'll call them special. They're actually definite articles. You'd most likely translate it into English as the or the. You know? I mean, you know the difference. He was looking forward to the city. He was looking forward to the city. There's a difference, isn't there? This verse has two definite articles in it. For he was looking forward to the city that has the foundations. I love that opening line. He was looking forward. You know what that means? It means he wasn't entirely satisfied here. He knew there was something more. He knew there was something yet to be had. There was a promise that was yet unfulfilled. There was a desire that had still been unmet. He wasn't satisfied yet. I don't know about you, but I would love to have been a fly on the wall listening to the conversation between God and Abraham. Because there was obviously a much longer conversation that went on than simply God coming to Abraham and saying, "Listen, leave your country, your relatives, and your father's house and go to the land I'll show you." The conversation was longer than that. You say, well, how do you know that? Because Abraham demonstrated an understanding of, a theological understanding of a divine program that no pagan would have ever understood. There had to be more of a conversation than what is recorded here. Now, I don't mean to be presumptuous, but can I tell you what that conversation went like? God came alongside Abraham and he said to him, "Abraham, I want to explain a few things to you. And I'm going to tell you then, after I have, what I want you to do." Things have not always been the way they are today. I made this world perfect. I was the ruler of this world. And all my creatures, including the humans, followed me. But Adam and Eve, first man, first woman, questioned my integrity. They resisted my authority. They violated my commandment. And the result of their action is that relationship with humanity has been broken. The result of their actions is that Satan, the god of this world, the prince of the power of the air, my enemy, is now the ruler of my world. Abraham, that's why you worship a creature instead of a creator. That's why so many people fill their lives with lesser gods, hoping to find a meaningful connection with deity. But it doesn't work. And things are getting worse and worse. I mean, already I've destroyed the world and nearly all of the people in it. I saved 8 so that there would be enough to start over again. And already the hearts of that group of people have been given over to evil. And so I've spread them all over the planet, and I've confused their languages so they can't collaborate with each other very well. That's why people where you live, Abraham, have never heard of me. But Abraham, don't be confused. I'm not going to leave things as they are. I'm going to make all things new. And since so much of the world has no idea who I am anymore, I'm going to form a new nation. And that nation will be a witness to the rest of the world about me. That's where you come in, Abraham. I want you to leave your country, your people, your father's house, and go to the place where that nation will live. And I will start that great nation from you. A nation through whom all of the nations of the earth will ultimately be blessed. I will bless you, and not only that, I'll bless everyone else who blesses you. And I'll work against everyone else that dishonors you. But not only that, I am ultimately going to take back control of this world, and I'm going to bind and separate Satan forever. And then I'm going to recreate this world to be what I originally intended it to be. In fact, I've already made a city, a beautiful city that is in heaven right now. And at the right moment, I'm going to recreate this world and bring this great city to this world, and life on this planet will revolve around that great city. Abraham, that city is your destiny. That city is your future. Now, I don't know how, but Abraham somehow saw that. In his heart and in his mind, he saw that city in all of its glory. It is the very same city that Ezekiel says, the name of that city is, the Lord is there. Whew. Is that a great name of one? The Lord's there. Abraham said, I want to experience that. I don't know when God is going to bring this to pass, but I can wait for that city as long as I know it's coming. I can endure in this place. I can endure in a place that I have never been to, don't know where I'm going, don't know what life is going to be like. I can endure there as long as I know at the end of it, I can live in that city. And with that vision in his mind, Abraham could patiently endure a life that was less than ideal. He lived like an alien for the rest of his life. He lived in a place that wasn't his home. He lived in a land of promise, and all the while living in that land that had been promised to him, he lived there as an alien. He never took possession of anything. Acts chapter 7 verse 5 tells us that he didn't even own land in the land that he had been promised. It's like living in a foreign place, isn't it? You know, the Bible refers to Abraham as a sojourner. That word literally means to live alongside of. That's exactly what he did. Abraham lived alongside of. He lived in tents alongside of all of those who viewed that place as their permanent home. But you can do that when you know what's coming. You can endure when you've seen a vision of the future that others haven't seen. You know, we heard the same thing from Mike last week, didn't we? For 120 years, Noah preached righteousness and built a boat. even though it had never rained. Living by faith is sometimes just plain being deaf to doubts, isn't it? It's being dumb to discouragement. It's being blind to impossibilities. Consequently, it can persevere through anything. Consequently, Abraham could be patient in the land of Canaan. He could be a nomad in a place that was his. He could wonder for all these years that he did because he was motivated by a vision that other people couldn't see. He was looking for that city that God had told him about. And you can endure when your focus is on the unseen. You know, there's so many ways in which this story and its truth relates to us. As a beginning point, this is an illustration of my walk of faith, isn't it yours? I mean, this is how I came to faith in Jesus Christ. God came along when I was godless. He came along and he called me to a journey with a destination that I've still not seen. I entered that journey by faith. By faith without knowing exactly what I was doing and where I was going. And all the while that I am on this journey, I live like a stranger in this world. I'm a sojourner. Alongside of a whole bunch of residents who think this place is their home. I'm a sojourner without ever taking possession of the promise that's been given to me yet. But I do it with absolute confidence that I will see the inheritance that I have been promised. And the possibility is that you stand at that decision point today. That God's called you. And then he said, listen, there is a destination that has been prepared for you. There is a life that you can live. And the result of it is that you can spend all eternity in my presence. You can live in that city with that foundation whose builder and maker is God. You can be there. But you have to say yes. You have to answer the call of God. You say, well, Don, I've already done that, so I guess this passage doesn't apply to me. Oh, yeah, it does. You know, on my spiritual journey, from the day I said yes to Christ until today, I have been through this process countless numbers of times. You know, and every time it looks the same. God comes along and he calls and he says, listen, I want you to go here and I want you to do that. And most of the time it makes no sense to me. I look at it and I think, I would never choose to do that. But he says, that's what I want you to do. That's his way of growing my faith. That's his way of deepening his relationship with me and mine with him. Listen to me, putting it as simply as I know how, living by faith is always saying yes to God. Period. End of discussion. He says, follow, I say yes. He says, I want to take you deeper and to make you more productive, I say yes. Isn't that what spiritual growth is? Isn't that what discipleship is? It's the process of saying no to self and saying yes to him. I think that's why Jesus said, if you want to follow me, you have to what? Deny yourself. You have to say no to yourself and yes to him. I have no idea what God's calling me to today. But I do know something. And that is, if you're following God, there's a high probability that there are at least some in this room that God's calling you to something. And the possibility exists that for some of you, you've been you've been seeking clarification for years. That's a nice way of saying you've been telling him no for years. You've been asking for clarification, wanting more, want a better picture, a greater vision. And you know what he says? He says, follow me. And I say, yes. Because listen to me, the greatest life that you'll ever live is the day you say yes to Christ, lock, stock, and barrel, hold nothing back. And that you commit to him up front at any moment that you say, go, I go. At any moment that you say, do, I do. Because I'm just telling you, that's the life of faith right there. Father, first of all, I pray for any person in this room that knows beyond a shadow of a doubt this morning that there is a call on their heart and on their life for anything, whether it's a life-forming, life-transforming decision to follow you with the rest of their life, or whether it's another of those moment-by-moment, step-by-step decisions that say, I have to continue to live this out. And he calls and I say yes. Lord, I pray for any person that's at that point of decision, I pray that you would give them the strength and the grace to say yes and to mean it and to live it out. Father, for all of us who are living in this world and are not a part of this world, for those of us who are sojourners in this world, even take some sense of enjoyment out of being here. Father, I pray that you would never let us forget this is not home. Our future is much more glorious than this. Our tomorrow looks so much better than our today. And I pray that we would grab hold of that promise, catch that vision, and let that vision motivate us until the ultimate vision occurs and we see you face to face. And until that day, you say go, I say yes.